For more than 100 days, former University of Michigan football player John Vaughn has been holding vigil outside the president's house on the U of M campus. He's been there to protest how the university has handled revelations of sexual abuse by former U of M Dr. Robert Anderson, who worked at the school for nearly four decades.
The biggest thing about my time in Michigan and being coached by Bo Schembechler and in that era, you taught us to thrive in a constant state of being uncomfortable in a sport that is controlled chaos. You built me for this fight. So how long will I stand until the job is done?
That time might be now. The University of Michigan announced this morning it is settling with more than 1,000 Robert Anderson survivors for $490 million. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Robert Anderson died in 2008, but he's left a devastating legacy with stories of physical and emotional abuse suffered by the survivors. People ranging from famous football players to anonymous undergrads have told of encounters with Anderson and the consequences he had on their health and well-being. Without a perpetrator against which criminal charges could be filed, the $490 million civil settlement reached with the university might be the only form of justice available to survivors. Here to tell us more is Kim Koslowski, a reporter for the Detroit News. She's written about the Anderson case at several stages. Kim, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, April.
The number of survivors now taking part in the settlement has climbed to 1,050. This is a dizzying number. Can you remind us how many lawsuits were underway against the university?
Well, it started off as one when the first allegation came forward, and it has grown over the past 2 years to dozens, to hundreds, to now to 1,050, mostly men. But there are a few women who are part of this lawsuit against the University of Michigan.
And if memory serves, the negotiations with the survivors have been going on well over a year, correct?
Mediation started in October 2020.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
About 6 to 8 months after the first accuser of Dr. Robert Anderson came forward. And the mediation has included former students, athletes, pilots, medical students, as I mentioned, women. There have been a number of people that have been part of this action.
The university has confirmed that the settlement will total nearly $500 million, $490 million. Do you know how much of that money will end up in the hands of victims?
Well, there has been a certain amount that has been set aside for those who come forward in the future. And there's also, of course, some that is going to go towards the lawyers. But we did work it out to be, I think it was about $440,000 each per person.
Kim, Dr. Robert Anderson worked at the university for decades. I want to say 1966 to 2003. And he saw some students several times, others only once. I imagine that different survivors will be entitled to different compensation.
Yes. The number that I did give you, the 440,000, is an average, but each amount will depend on individual circumstances. And there will be someone in the court who will be making those determinations.
Kim, can you give us a broad sense of the scope of this settlement and what's going on here compared with another big sexual assault case that people are no doubt familiar with, that of Larry Nassar, who used to be a faculty member at MSU?
Well, the settlement amount is the same. The women who were assaulted by Larry Nassar did settle for something similar, $500 million, which was also another historic settlement with the university. But there were fewer of them in that settlement in 2018. The exact amount for each, of course, was confidential and it varied. but they split an average of 1.27 million each.
We've learned through your reporting that part of the settlement calls for one of the survivors, John Vaughn, to remove himself and his encampment from in front of the University of Michigan, former University of Michigan President Mark Schlissel's home. What has the encampment meant to the university's image through the course of this story?
Well, the university hasn't spoken very candidly about how they feel about the protest. So exactly what they think and is not clear, but I can tell you this, that there's some three main men in this case. The first is Tad DeLuca. He wrote two letters to the University of Michigan, and one of them when he was a student many years ago, and the second one was in 2018, and that spawned the police investigation of Dr. Anderson. The second man is Robert Julian Stone. He was the one who sounded the alarm in February 2020 when he told his story publicly and accused Dr. Anderson of sexual assault, even though he had been dead more than a decade. But John Vaughn has become the face of this scandal with his campout that reached 100 days this past week. He's been out there. He's been joined by some of the other Anderson survivors, as well as survivors from the Larry Nassar scandal, as well as those from Ohio State. And there have been protests, and there have been students who have stopped by, as well as faculty. Faculty have invited him to speak to their classes. And during the time that he's been out there, he has spoken with students, and he says that many of them have shared their stories of sexual assault on campus and how they weren't able to find justice. And so they felt at some point their mission out there had changed. Initially, the mission was to get the university president to speak to him and some of the other Anderson survivors. But at this point, they felt like the cause became bigger than themselves, and they felt that they needed to do something to address what they feel is still currently happening on the campus.
One question that might be on a lot of people's minds right now is the timing of this settlement. It was just Saturday night that the university's Board of Regents fired President Mark Schlissel for an alleged inappropriate relationship with a subordinate. I should say agreed to fire. That decision will be affirmed next month, we believe. Mary Sue Coleman is serving as interim president for the university. And now, just 2 days after she picks up the mantle, this very large settlement is announced. Do we know, first of all, who gave the thumbs up for this settlement at the university?
I did ask that question, and I have not heard. So, no, I do not know.
Kim Koslowski, you've been reporting this story since the early days when survivors were just starting to come out. What do you think this has done to increase our understanding of how these things can happen, even at some of the largest and most well-funded institutions in our state?
Well, as you mentioned, I have been covering this since the beginning, as well as covering the Larry Nassar sex abuse scandal. And I think it shows us that these unfortunate situations can happen to both women and men, and that when people have spoken out, they've not always been heard or taken seriously. And I do think that there has been a movement to try and change cultures on both of the campuses so that these don't happen again. And the movement is encompassing those who are involved, allies, and people within the institution and community.
We need to take a quick break here. Before we do, we want to note that a representative from the University of Michigan says the removal of John Vaughn's encampment is not formally part of the settlement. However, the deal has not been finalized. All right, in just a minute, we'll have more on the Anderson settlement from one of the attorneys representing Anderson survivors. We'll be right back.
So Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Hundreds of former athletes and students say that Robert Anderson sexually abused them during routine sports physicals or other medical appointments. Several say that they reported it to higher-ups, including legendary Michigan coach Bo Schembechler. Attorney Mick Graywall represents a number of those survivors. He's also represented more than 100 women and girls who were abused by Dr. Larry Nassar in settlement negotiations with Michigan State University and USA Gymnastics. Mick Graywall told us that this settlement for the Anderson survivors represents a victory for more than just his clients.
I actually believe, you know, the settlement actually represents a victory for all survivors of sexual abuse. And it's an important step in obtaining transparency, accountability, and justice. You need to understand that, particularly in this case, it's very unique that you don't have the perpetrator there that they could have any form of closure like my clients did in the Larry Nassar case. Anderson is deceased. And most of the people that were around during the time of this are no longer at the university or are deceased as well. So in order for them to have some form of justice, a settlement needed to be reached so they could move forward and take their first steps towards healing.
Right. The case first came to light about 2 years ago, and since then, we've heard from hundreds of people coming forward. Most of those who've spoken publicly about this have been men, including football players, even Bo Schembechler's own son. Their accounts were so gut-wrenching, but this abuse clearly has been a secret that they've had to live with for so long. Can you say a little bit about what that has meant in their lives?
You're talking about a different time frame where people were basically told to be quiet. They were never believed. I mean, that was the culture then. The culture now has slowly shifted, but it's been difficult. We have clients from the late 60s all the way to 2003. I represent men and women, white and black. It's across the board, but in this case, predominantly men, and this is attacking their masculinity, which is very hard for men to open up to begin with. And if you add African-American men, it's even harder, but just because of the culture. So having this vast number step forward and having their voices heard means something. It means something to me. It means the work that I'm doing is validated because voices are being heard and the shame and blame game might be gone, because that's what we used to deal with. If a victim stepped forward, they were shamed and blamed. They were never believed.
What do we know about reports made to the university about Robert Anderson over the years? Do you feel like you have a satisfactory trail of who knew what and when they knew it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Matt Schembechler is my client. I know he told his father, Bo, and he told Don Canham. I know even before him, there were individuals who told Bump Elliott prior to Bo being instituted as the head coach. And it went on from there, from trainers to other coaches to Mr. Toy, who was the one that originally terminated Anderson, all the way up to pretty much every head coach there and every trainer. There were longstanding jokes going on that you would have to go see Drop Your Doors Anderson, or you're going to have the finger in your rectum or your butt. They made it very clear that this was going to happen. In fact, it's sad to report that it was sometimes used as a form of punishment that if you didn't do X, you would be sent to Dr. Anderson.
Can you compare the scale of what happened in Dr. Anderson's exam rooms with what has happened in other cases you've worked on? 1,050 people will benefit from this settlement. The scale is just mind-boggling.
Well, you think this is over 3.5 decades. It's sad to report that I believe there's a lot of people that have not come forward, just because, you know, they themselves have dealt with this. Maybe they've locked it away in their mind because the mind is a powerful tool, and they've moved on with their lives. But you're right, having 1,050 plus survivors getting some form of vindication is something. Compared to other cases, even in Michigan State, the original settlement pertained to 333 women predominantly. But even afterwards, there was a second wave. I believe there was over 200 women. So that was about 550. And then in the USAG case, which I was part of as well, there was another 500 women there. So this is twice the size. I mean, the scale is large, but I also like to think that 1,000 people are going to get some form of justice.
Mick, can you describe what was going on with the negotiations with the university toward the end of last year?
I got to be careful here because we do have a mediation privilege. But, you know, we were actively engaged in mediation from October of 2020 through this announcement. And, you know, there's always ups and downs in mediations. I guess everybody has different perspectives, and it depends on what's going on in the climate and the culture. Sadly, COVID did not help. COVID was very hard to do certain mediation procedures as you would normally do by going to court, et cetera. But I like to add that, you know, I think in the end, everybody determined this was the right thing to do. Both the attorneys involved, on my colleagues on the plaintiff side, and the university attorneys and the general counsel and the Board of Regents.
Are you able to say whether the exit of former U of M President Mark Schlissel affected the final stages of the process?
I don't believe so. I will give the fact that the University of Michigan did terminate Schlissel rather quickly, but I think they terminated him quickly because of the voices of all these survivors. Because if we didn't come forward, my belief is that this thing would still be going on. Now everybody's under a microscope, not just in Michigan, but across the country.
Yeah. What, can you tell us what you're able to assure the university about any future litigation as a result of this settlement?
Well, the way the settlement is the proposed settlement is structured is a $490 million settlement with $460 million being allocated towards the 1,050 plus survivors that we collectively represent. The other $30 million is what we call the reserve. That will be for any future claimants that come forward. If there are future claimants, if they do, they will then go through a similar allocation procedure to make a claim towards that $30 million. If there's any unused portion left, it reverts back to the original settlement survivors, the 1,050 plus.
Right. It's so hard to wrap our minds around something happening at this scale. Do you have an answer for those who are wondering how on earth this could have happened, how it could have gone on for so long?
Well, that's what I was telling you about the culture shift. You know, imagine going back 30, 40 years where people were homophobic and no one wanted to talk about this. And at that time frame, no one would ever say anything to their elders. No one would ever say anything to their coaches. When a coach becomes an idol, and I'm going to use Bo Schembechler as an example, no one ever wanted to say anything against Bo. He was like, you know, he was like a god at University of Michigan. So when you have these nice guys or these powerful people in positions of power, as a single voice, you won't be heard. Even as multiple voices, you won't be heard. And why they don't want to police themselves is actually mind-boggling to me. But what I have learned is that you can't have an institution ever police itself. And I'll use both Michigan State and Michigan as great examples. You know, they all want to do these independent investigations, but truly, none of these investigations are independent because they're hired by the institution themselves. So who does the duty lie to? It lies to the institution. If you want a true investigation or a true place to report to, you need to report out.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find more from Stateside at michiganradio.org. Today's pod episode was produced by April Van Buren. Other producers on our show are Aaron Allen, Mike Blank, Mercedes Mejia, and Claire Murashima. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.